as two strands without connections to each other. In such a way, they not only intend to drown the Palestinian population, but also the Palestinian economy. Now they continue encouraging or forcing in every possible way the Palestinian population to leave the place. But we Palestinians have resisted stubbornly. We have stayed on the land to which we belong, and we have no intention of abandoning this land to make way for the continuity of the neocolonial Zionist project. And that is why we today face an ongoing genocide in Gaza, because the leaders of the Zionist project have understood that the foreigners can never defeat those who have remained in this land forever. I offer you the floor. We have time for two questions, please.
Tiempo para dos preguntas, por favor.
Un saludo. Mi nombre es Jorge Avedrapo, profesor.
Greetings, my name is Jorge Avedrapo. Here is my question. It is true that the Zionists considered several options, territorial options, to carry out their projects among some Latin American countries. I mean, finally, what could happen in the future at a global level if the advance of Israel's colonial project is not stopped?
Efectivamente, Jorge, entre el primero y el cuarto congreso sionista.
Indeed, Jorge, between the first and the fourth Zionist congresses, most of them held in Basel, Switzerland, several alternatives were put into discussion, including Uganda and Chilean-Argentine Patagonia. The underlying theme was that there was no excuse that could be used to expel the inhabitants of these territories, and therefore they resorted to the myths of the biblical promise and the chosen people to sustain a colonial project like Zionism. And that is why Palestine ended up being chosen. Furthermore, if one looks at this as a projection not only of a Palestinian issue, because the problem is not only here. This is a problem of the global North-South confrontation, and therefore what happens in Palestine will have an intimate relationship with what happens in the Western Sahara, with what happens in other parts of the world, in Gualmapo, in our country, where the hegemonic classes, world imperialism, and transnational imperialism must do everything possible to protect the interests they harvest through occupying every inch of this territory and controlling every inch of the market and effectively appropriating any common property or natural resources. This strategy exists in the world. Therefore, from my humble perspective, the only possibility of reaching a just solution in Palestine is the overcoming of capitalism on a global scale.
Es la superación del capitalismo a escala global.
Hola, mi nombre es Carlota.
I am Carolina Espina. I am president of the Luis Emilio Recovera Collection and Research Center in Zeiler. My question is, why is the word apartheid used to refer to the Israeli policy against Palestine?
El apartheid es un concepto que se utiliza.
Apartheid is a concept that is used to refer to states or societies where there are two different systems inside them. For example, in South African apartheid, where within the same country, South Africa, there was a system for whites and a system for people of African descent. This system is seen today in Palestine and also in Israel, because not only within Israel there are first and second category citizens and different systems for those who are historically Palestinian and for Israeli citizens, but things are also tough for those who have recently arrived there and have just adopted Israeli citizenship. That's because they are Zionists and have many more rights than the Palestinians who have lived in Israel since before their birth. In addition, what we are seeing today in Gaza and the West Bank is a situation where the Israelis and the occupation, the illegal occupying power, the illegal Israeli settlers have all the rights, but the Palestinians have none. That is why the word apartheid was coined, and that is why it has been expanding the possibility of everyone recognizing the Israeli occupation as an apartheid system. We must never forget that in 1974, the United Nations General Assembly decreed that Zionism was a form of racism, homologously comparable to South African apartheid. This is while, due to the changes in the correlation of forces and North American and European pressure, this resolution was annulled several decades later. But this has not annulled the spirit and essence of Zionism, that in all these years, nothing has changed.
I
have mentioned it in other programs, and I reiterate it today with more force than ever. Palestine, in its 5,000 years of history, has lived only 120 years of peace. The Palestinian people consisted of an ethnic strain absolutely intercultural, composed of Jews, Christians, Muslims, atheists, belonging to diverse peoples who have settled in Palestine at some point in history. They have been there since before the first invaders arrived, and they will surely be there after the last ones leave. Today, thousands of supposed Israeli citizens have abandoned Israel because they no longer feel safe among the Palestinians. The Palestinian nation sink their legs and roots into the ground of their homeland, where they are born, grow, and die. That's because Palestine is their land. I invite you to watch this program next week to learn more about the concept of genocide in Gaza. Don't miss the next episode of A Window to Palestine.
En el próximo capítulo de Ventana a Palestina.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters. 9,650 kHz every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we will be exploring the Islamic upbringing of children and youth, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed some light on this important subject. Salaamu Alaikum, Sister Salma, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Alaikum Salaam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
So we've been discussing this question for a few episodes, and you know about how to guide the teenage son, especially before they grow up and before it's too late.
Yeah.
And you gave some very nice important points where, you know, you mentioned about trustworthiness, truthfulness, grateful to parents, like how to inculcate all of these characteristics in the child. And the last point we have been discussing was, you know, how to instill not getting attracted to this world and the worldly things in easily, and
material,
that at times, yeah, this material stuff, which at times is very difficult. So you've been mentioning that. Do you have anything more to say about that, or should we go to the next point?
Yeah, we go to the next point now. The next point is wasting time and money. It's important to inculcate that to a young child when he grows up about maybe 11, 12,
yeah,
when you start giving him some pocket money to choose, maybe buying his stuff or maybe in, you know, for school or something like that. You have to really gently explain him that this money doesn't come by easy, and we don't have to waste it or, you know, just lose it. Sometimes this child is so careless that he just puts aside his money and loses it, or it's being stolen or stepped,
yeah,
things like that. Or not to waste it. For example, waste in buying things that are unnecessary, or keep on buying things that, you know, or, okay, use to what you require
need
and need.
Yeah.
And also you at the same time, don't go to places where your daughter or son feels that you're shopping every day.
Yeah.
You know, some mothers have this habit that they want to shop the best clothes and they keep on shopping, and then the child asks, but you have this at home. The child is innocent. They'll ask them, you have this, you have two of these at home.
Yeah.
Why do you want to buy? And the mother says, no, just for my own fancy. For example, I like the style of it. So the child will also learn. Yeah, when you like a style of it, you keep on buying. But that's nothing other than israf.
Yeah, and yeah, I think it's sometimes there's this fine line between wasting and kind of thinking that this is not important. So, for example, I remember there was a time when I was young, when I used to, like, my flash disks, I was given flash disks and it got lost. And this, you know, my mom was like, it's not good, you know. And I was like, no, this is worldly things, you know, you don't have to care about these things. And then she was like, no, that's
yeah,
israf.
Exactly. Yeah, not laying importance on the things that you buy and then when it's lost, right?
Yeah,
yeah, no, that even is israf. In in effect, that you have to buy again. Yeah. In the long run, you need exactly. it, right? So it's like if, for example, you iron roughly your clothes and they get burnt, it's just a worldly thing. No, that doesn't mean that you take care of it. Or you wear your shoes. In fact, our Ahlul Bayt used to have the clothes, special attire for outside and for the home wear.
Yeah.
So outside, you know, your clothes are preserved so that you don't keep on buying other clothes. And home wear is like, you know, they get worn out and everything. So it doesn't mean that, you know, you keep on, you know, like you're underestimating the fact that this dunya is nothing and yeah. okay.
Everything, yeah, everything you know, it's
is
okay.
Going, yeah, it's okay. No, that's wasting actually. Yeah. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also says, Kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu. So eat and drink, but do not do israf. And sometimes israf can be done in also overeating, for example, as far as eating is concerned.
Yeah.
You know, overdoing something. So israf is not just that you, for example, not do it, or it yeah. can be done.
Sometimes excessive doing it.
And yeah, or not yeah. doing it at all is also israf. For example, sometimes we have some food that is left over and we feel that if we don't eat it, it will be israf. No, our stomachs will pain in the end. So that is more israf. So we have to decipher.
Yeah, very true. So we're just going to take a quick break and pick up shortly from this.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
So welcome back to IRIB English Radio, where we have been discussing a very important aspect to inculcate in our children, which is how to handle money. And you've been mentioning about, you know, we don't have to waste it or uselessly spend it. And, you know, money is actually something that we have to be careful about, and just generally to instill that in our children.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do you have anything more to say about
that? Last but not least is one master character trait and virtue that by observing all these things that I talked about in the previous programs and even today, some of them, is that piety will be achieved.
Mm.
That piety that we are working for without spelling it to be a taqwa, a piety, telling them, be pious. All these qualities will instill a piety in him, a fear of him, that what he's doing, he should be aware, he should be truthful, he should be trustworthy, he should not, he should be grateful to his parents, that Allah has given him such good parents, or parents at least.
Yeah.
He should be grateful for that, and he should be also not wasting his time, money, energy, be focused, be determined. All these things, if you go and see, gives a perfect plan for a teenager to tread on that path, that of perfection that Allah wants for him, and that his growth lies in it, and he will become successful in both worlds. So without telling, you know, come, I teach you about piety. You know what piety is?
Yeah.
No. Teach about all these things, truthfulness, trust, worldliness, you know, like respecting parents, respecting elders, all these things come under being grateful, of course, to parents, because parents would like their children to respect elders also.
Definitely.
Being determined, having a goal, a purpose, not wasting time, money, you know,
all this together
bring about the taqwa. So we as elders also, if we want the taqwa, we should practice all this, and more so teenagers, because teenagers have that aptitude of picking up very fast, being influenced,
yeah.
you know. So if we, you know, just they will think about it. They would, you know, you can fool a child easily, but you can't fool a teenager or an adult. They will see your actions, that if they're doing that and their contrary is speaking something else. So we should be very careful, especially in your teenagers. If you want to start right away, we can do that without, you know, beforehand. Like this parent, mashallah, she's very determined to do a great job on her teenager. I pray for that to happen.
Inshallah.
So she's been like wanting to know beforehand.
Yeah, and I think when you see such a teenager, you know, who has all these qualities, you kind of have a certain sort of
love and attraction, right?
Yeah, because it's something very hard to come by, and it's something very hard. They have to have a lot of, you know, willpower to be able to do all of this. So it's definitely.
And our scholars were like that. Imagine those tender teenagers were like that.
Yeah.
Like great scholar of Aidullah Misbah Yazdi. He was just 17 when he came, and how he was as a teenager, you know, you feel, mashallah, what upbringing he must have had, that he had all those quality. Right. And that's why when he passed away, like, he was so, mashallah, with so many good, he left behind so many good teachings and books and
definitely. And I think just recently we were talking to some of the, we were seeing actually a video, and they were saying, you know, why do we have all these shuhada martyrs, streets names, and like, why is it so important to constantly remind yourself that, okay, this is the, they know that they live in the street and they don't know much about that shaheed, but just this reminder that you have these kind of youth who are able to be such pure people,
accomplish such things,
and it was hard, but they managed, so we can
exactly, and they were not masoom, so if they were not, and they could, so why not us?
Definitely,
any teenager, if he sees and is given this kind of atmosphere, will reach great heights.
Definitely,
I believe that strongly,
inshallah. So we're just going to take another short break and we'll be back soon.
Ya muqi al-khayrat, Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, a righteous child is indeed a flower from the flowers of paradise.
Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat, Ya Muqiya al-Khayrat.
Welcome back, and we're going to pose another question where somebody has asked, my 15-year-old daughter doesn't talk about any of her problems with me, and I can know she's going through some tough times, but she feels I'm nagging when I ask her how she is facing all these problems. How do I make her confide in me?
When teenagers, come of that age, they suddenly become aloof.
Yeah.
You know, because they want their independence. It's not a wrong thing. We should allow that also. But this parent seems like she must be nagging, if that girl feels like she's nagging.
Okay.
Her daughter feels like she's nagging. Because children know when the parents are not nagging or they are nagging, right? When you keep on asking, keep on stressing, then the child will not feel like. In fact, they'll be more stubborn not to say that, yeah?
Mm.
So what teenagers, especially girls, they're soft-hearted, they need support, love, empathy. All these things are very important. So if the parent gives that quiet moment and then quickly steals the moment when the child is talking, finds a good moment and becomes an active listener. This is very important. Active listening. Active listening is when you're, for example, doing even something and the child wants to talk a little to you, immediately go to the child and listen to them, especially when it comes to teenagers, and especially when it comes to this girl who's 15-year-old and doesn't want to talk about anything. At some point in time, the parents will try to make them happier. Maybe cook their best meal or make them laugh or, become lighthearted. Even the mood of the home, the atmosphere should be so lighthearted so that it penetrates in the mind and heart. And not anxiety filled, that you're worried, she's worried, okay, there's a kind of ice in between. Calm behavior, okay, this happens, this is normal. Then slowly, slowly they let out. As soon as they start talking, grasp the moment. Whatever you're doing, if they need you, grasp the moment. Not that, okay, now I'm doing, hold on, let me finish this ironing of mine or cooking of mine, then I'm coming to sit with you. No. Leave that aside, however urgent it might be, which is not that much urgent, I believe. Mm-hmm. Any home task cannot be that urgent. It can wait a little. And go and talk and confide so that the girl can confide. And when she sees that there's a reassurance, there's a love, there's a empathy, obviously she will even talk about it.
Yeah.
Whatever be it, even it will be little, she won't let out, don't expect that they let out each and every detail of what they're going through. But they will at least say what's going on. Maybe she lost her friend, maybe she fought with her friend, or maybe she was scolded by her teacher, or given warnings, or harmed by somebody, or hit by somebody. She will talk about it then. Yeah? What's bothering her? Teenagers, they have this kind of problems.
And I feel like many times the teenagers feel that, the parents don't take their problem seriously. You know, like, for example, this is important to me, but if my mother just takes it lightly, or, you know, then I feel like she doesn't understand me, you know,
exactly.
Like, she doesn't get me.
But so, my friend understands
but
me.
Yeah, for example, others understand me. So this kind of relationship, I feel like I had a very nice relationship with my mom. She would, you know, try and understand me. She would try and be an active listener. And I felt like that is the main reason why I never fell astray, because she was constantly like there, was backing me up, you know, was giving me that support, which I felt like I was...
Need somebody to understand me and love
she understands me.
And don't complain.
Definitely.
Right?
So I think that is very important. So we're going to end here, and inshallah, maybe we can expand on this in the next episode. Thank you so much for your valuable time, and we hope to see you in the next episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening. And this was IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. If you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI, which is Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can also email us on englishradio@irib.ir. God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Economic divide.
BRICS is a grouping of countries that will make a lot of noise this year. One of the breakouts will be the introduction of a national currency, which will pose a challenge to the U.S. dollar. Will this actually impact the Western-dominated system and give it a run for the money, as it's, the saying goes? Also, a look at the introduction of a new payment system using blockchain technology. Just a couple of the angles we'll be looking at in this edition of Economic Divide. Some of the highlights coming up: the BRICS payment system, blockchain technology, digital innovations. It'll penetrate the international monetary framework. That's what it says it's going to do. We have to wait and see whether that will happen or not. Next, the monetary system that this will create, it will be one free of politics. Also, the use of national currencies and de-dollarization, which is an important drive behind this new monetary system, which will include a new BRICS currency. Then we move on to the interest that lies for BRICS and joining this alliance. New memberships, nearly 36 new countries are interested to join this bloc. Does this mean it's a break with the West? Time now to take a look at the social media post on this. First up, is the world moving away from the U.S. dollar? I've got a bad feeling about this, including there will be bank failures. U.S. Fed Chair, BRICS, CBDC, Bank Term Funding Program, Blank Check, Dodd-Frank, Bail-ins, discover the facts about central bank digital currencies. Very interesting post, actually. It named a lot of controversial type financial, I guess, terms here. Next, the Bank of America has issued a major warning of the U.S. dollar's potential collapse. Another one that covers the dollar. This is due to the U.S. debt rising by $1 trillion every 100 days, and the BRICS economy driving Eastern countries away from the dollar. Then the West is exhausting itself, trying to hold power. Russia is making them look weak. China is watching them destroy themselves. BRICS is growing and challenging the dollar. Israel has totally lost their minds. The global majority stopped obeying. The empire is dying. Wow, that's a mouthful. Then BRICS to control 37% of the world's GDP. They aim to de-dollarize the globe and strengthen local currencies. We could be looking at an entirely different world soon. Notice how many of these posts actually cover the dollar. All right, let's bring in our guest for our first Q&A. Joining us is Gulruz Sheikh. He's a geopolitical expert. Gulrez Sheikh, welcome to Economic Divide. The BRICS Alliance, you're very, I'm sure, familiar with it, because it includes countries like Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Now, they're planning to collaborate on developing this payment system, which uses the blockchain technology, also digital innovations. This is part of a broader strategy. What is this system all about? Tell us basically how this is going to work.
The BRICS grouping is working on blockchain technology and digital payment system, and this is basically to exert its monetary influence across the geopolitical and geo-economical spectrum. But it is also a tool to keep the BRICS economies safe from the Western hegemony and the Western dominated economic system, because they have basically weaponized the dollar, they have weaponized the Western financial system, be it SWIFT or others. Today they may be good with any country, but tomorrow, if they are on odds on any topic with you, they can sanction you. And the best example we have seen is the example of Russia. The way they put it out of the Swiss system, the way they barred it from using the dollar system, and this shows that nobody can be safe, and nobody can have a guarantee that tomorrow they are not going to sanction you on any particular issue. So this is a system which will be actually free from Western hegemony, which will be free from sanctions, and it will give more geopolitical and geo-economical and financial autonomy to the BRICS countries.
All right, very well. Thank you so much for that. Let's bring in our next guest. We have Thambisa Fakuda, who's a senior research fellow, Africa-Asia Dialogue, Chief Executive Officer at the Mail and Garden newspaper, who joins us. Thambisa Fakuda, welcome to Economic Divide. Russia has made some statements about this new blockchain technology for the payment system, and he says that there was actually a need for this, that the general population needs to use this, because it's one of the major factors is that's free of political influence and economically efficient. And also, he emphasized increasing settlements in national currencies. Do you think this is all about de-dollarization?
Well, I think it's a good effort, but I don't think, for example, a country like South Africa will go for de-dollarization. But what they will do is to look for an alternative currency. So in other words, they will avoid to be seen as being hostile towards the dollar, rather go towards a currency that's going to be used and accepted, as we discussed, including by President Xi Jinping of China, that there is a need for BRICS countries to have their own alternative currency. But I think the process forward will not be to de-dollarize business, because that seems and sounds very harsh and hostile towards countries that many of these BRICS countries still enjoy relationships with. But I think what is likely to get a softer landing in terms of introducing this new currency within BRICS will be to push for a new currency that will be used within the BRICS members. So Iran, of course, has got its own political agenda, in inverted commas, in terms of ensuring, which is correct, by the way, supported by many African countries, the de-dollarization is key. But I think countries like South Africa will be wary of being seen to be jumping on the bandwagon and fighting the new cause of de-dollarization. Instead, I think they are likely to look at an alternative currency.
U.S. inequality. America's top 1% gets $2 trillion richer. It's said the combined wealth of the richest people in the U.S. has grown to $44.6 trillion. Now, it's interesting to note that in the fourth quarter of 2023, they saw their combined net worth rise by around $2 trillion. That's a major chunk. Next up, U.S. supply chains. Well, by now, you're probably familiar with the U.S. Baltimore Bridge collapse. The bigger problem is how the U.S. supply chains have been disrupted by this collapse. It has cut off ocean routes to the city's major port and is expected to cause severe disruptions to local transport and logistics and also global supply chains. Our take, the Baltimore Bridge collapse underscores aging infrastructure. While the U.S. spends billions of dollars on Ukraine, military assistance to other countries, and the maintenance of over 700 military bases. Next up, the Islamic halal economy. The global halal economy is on the rise, and it has an increase in demand. This has fueled more opportunities for investment in Sharia-compliant ways. The global Islamic halal economy is reportedly set to reach a market value of $7.7 trillion by the year 2025, more than double the $3.2 trillion that reached in 2015. And finally, is a U.S. housing crisis on the surface? And the question asked in this entry, is the U.S. media layoffs a phenomenon pointing towards the next housing crisis? The media sector's challenges amplify shadow banks' toll on the U.S. economy and also mirror the 2008 housing crisis. While the media business is in the spotlight now, it is a microcosm of a bigger challenge across the economy, like the massive tech layoffs.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The BRICS bloc has announced that it will work on creating a new payment system. What is this new payment system and how will that affect trade for BRICS countries? Let's take a look at that. First up, this new payment system that BRICS has announced will be based on what's called blockchain and digital technologies. Now, the definition of that is an advanced database mechanism that allows transparent information sharing within a business network. A blockchain database stores data in blocks that are linked together in a chain. Now, the next thing is how this new system is going to settle trade and transactions, and it will effectively become an alternative option to the U.S. dollar. The fact that this is going to be free of the U.S. dollar has been put under the microscope as to whether it's going to be able to do that or not. The introduction of a national currency, however, is going to speed that process up. Next, how this move is going to be absolutely crucial in helping the bloc trade in these local currencies, and it will help them reduce their reliance on the dollar. So the dollar issue again, and to be free from the shackles of it, remains a pivotal reason. Next, the BRICS financial system, well, it will allow the member countries to completely avoid using any of the Western transfer systems, such as SWIFT. SWIFT is the most prominent one. For example, the BRICS announced that the system will be available to countries and to businesses and even to people, and that's going to set it apart from the Western-dominated financial system. So basically, there needs to be no restrictions placed on the financial system that's going to be introduced by the blockchain technology for BRICS countries. Let's bring back our guests and see what they think. Goresh Sheikh rejoins us. He is a geopolitical expert. Goresh Sheikh, welcome back to Economic Divide. A lot of interest has been channeled towards BRICS and new members, notably countries like Saudi Arabia, like Iran, for example, to have joined now the BRICS alliance. Why is there such an interest in this organization, do you think, in the first place? And some of these countries actually have financial ties to the West.
See, if you look at BRICS, it's a rising star. As well, and if you look at G7, it's setting right now. And right now all the major economic activities are going on in the global south, because with the rise of multipolar world order, the countries of south, the global south, are demanding their rights. They are working towards technology, they are working towards manufacturing. They were already doing a lot of work when it comes to commodity. They are having minerals with them, they are also having manpower. Do not forget that demographics are best in the global south compared to the global north. So any country will like to sit in the camp of those people who are progressing. And if you look at the GDP, right now BRICS GDP is more than that of G7. And if you look at G7, it used to be G8 when Russia was also there. Now they had also thrown out Russia from G8 and made it G7. So barring Japan, it's basically an Anglo-Saxon grouping. They cannot expand themselves. They have reached their limit because it is Anglo-Saxon grouping. They don't have any more or any other Anglo-Saxon country which can be included in the G7 grouping.
All right, thank you for that. Let's now bring back our next guest, Thambisa Fakuda, who's a senior research fellow, Africa-Asia Dialogue, and chief executive officer at the Mail and Guardian newspaper. Thambisa Fakuda, welcome back. When you take a look at the grouping of BRICS, there are many options that are opened because of the fact that there's so many different promises that are being made when it comes to, for example, the BRICS payment system, blockchain technology, and also the introduction of a national currency. Even though you have countries dealing in the national currencies, what is the main appeal when it comes to BRICS to align themselves into one grouping? Of course, you have the five major economies that are leading this group.
I think they're very close, and I don't think they contradict the current systems that we have. Instead, you're going to have more competitiveness in terms of the global currency exchanges. So from the South African perspective, I think they see this as an addition towards that market competing. Because there are quite a number of these products that are involved in currency transfers and payment systems globally. So this one is a new one, and this one, of course, will include a different type of countries compared to what we've seen in the past. So I think it's going to be a welcome move, and many African countries will have an alternative now and a sense of ownership in terms of participating in this business of worldwide transfer of and payments for goods and services.
The BRICS Alliance is a grouping of countries that cannot be ignored, since this alliance is not just comprised of five countries which have a lot to offer when it comes to the global economy. The BRICS Alliance, once considered a peripheral entity, is now at the forefront of forging a new world order, challenging the status quo and proposing alternatives that could lead to significant shifts in global alliances and economic practices. Throughout 2023, the bloc, which includes powerhouse countries like Iran, Russia, India, China, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and South Africa, has taken significant strides in reshaping the global power balance. The addition of six new countries, including Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Iran, Egypt, and Ethiopia, has bolstered the alliance's influence.
We see the BRICS partnership as a catalyst for global growth and development and response to the needs of all nations.
One of the major announcements that BRICS will be making this year is the introduction of a native currency. But how will this impact the current financial system, especially the Western-dominated system? There is no doubt that this currency could challenge the dominance of traditional financial systems and foster a more multipolar world order. If realized, the introduction of a BRICS-specific currency, whether digital or fiat, could redefine global trade dynamics and unilateral settlements. This move would also align with the bloc's ongoing efforts to challenge the dominance of traditional financial powerhouses and foster a more multipolar world order. It would be very simple-minded to think that The introduction of a BRICS currency would take off and for there not to be disruptions in the day-to-day trade between countries from within BRICS or with countries who are not BRICS members. The BRICS currency does offer a new avenue for international transactions, especially for countries looking to bypass traditional financial channels. It also represents a significant step towards the de-dollarization of global trade, a long-standing goal of several BRICS members. However, the success of such a currency would depend on various factors, including its acceptance by international markets and its ability to provide stability and security in financial transactions. And that does it for this Quick Take section.
Finally, BRICS is going to shake up the financial system that's dominated by the West. There's no doubt about that, given how so many countries are queuing up to join the alliance. The West in particular, the U.S., for example, will continue to use the dollar as a weapon and impose sanctions on countries that don't follow its lead. That's going to lead to more countries' desire to join BRICS. That does it for this edition of the program. Thank you so much for being with us. BRICS is a very hot topic for us here. From Ikem Itawe and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye. Until the next program.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
The European Union Environment Agency is saying countries across Europe should be prepared for catastrophic risks, ranging from floods to deadly heat waves, as worsening climate change hits every part of their economies and societies. We take a look at some of the World Press and Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The European Environment Agency, the EEA, has said in its first risk assessment, Europe is not prepared for the rapidly growing climate risk that it faces. From wildfires burning down homes to violent weather straining public finances, the report says more action is needed to address half of the 36 significant climate risks with potentially severe consequences that it identifies for Europe. The report says five more risks need urgent attention. Lina Ilamononen, the EEA's executive director, said, "Our new analysis shows that Europe faces urgent climate risks that are growing faster than our societal preparedness." The report looks at how severe the climate threats are and how Europe is to deal with them. It says the most pressing risks, which are growing worse as fossil fuel pollution heats the planet, are heat stress, flash floods and river floods, the health of coastal and marine ecosystems, and the need for solidarity funds to recover from disasters. when the researchers reassessed six of the risks for southern Europe, which they described as a hotspot region. They found urgent action was also needed to keep crops safe and to protect people, buildings and nature from wildfires. Robert Biesbroek, a report author from Wageningen University in the Netherlands, who also co-led the chapter on Europe in the latest Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report on adaptation, said, "There is increasing evidence of adaptation, but it's certainly not enough." Robert Biesbroek said, "It's not going quickly enough and it's not reaching the ones that need it most. It's quite scary in that sense." The report also warns of cascading and compounding risks, which it says current stress tests in the financial sector are likely to underestimate. For instance, hot weather will dry out southern Europe, killing crops and shrinking water supplies, but will also harden soils, making flash floods more likely, and dry out vegetation, meaning wildfires can spread faster in southern Europe. Governments trying to respond to several crises will be more stretched for resources, as will communities that fail to prepare. Blaz Koenig, the head of the European Environment Agency's Impacts and Adaptation Group, said, "The risks are simply outpacing the developments of policies." Europe has heated up more than any other continent since the Industrial Revolution. It has heated about twice as fast as the global average, as carbon dioxide has clogged the atmosphere and trapped sunlight. The researchers looked at two possible scenarios of low and high warming over the century. They did not consider potential tipping points in the climate system, arguing that the effects of such dramatic changes would unfold over longer time periods, and so did not change the urgency of action in the short term. Daniela Schmidt of Bristol University, who sat on the advisory board of the report but was not involved in writing of the report, said, "The geographical granularity that the report offered was important, but questioned whether another report on risk was needed." She said, "Will it increase the action? Will it make people more ready to have more information about what those key risks for us are looking like?" Daniela Schmidt, who also co-led the chapter on Europe for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report on adaptation, said people should understand that governments, cities and individuals had agency to reduce risks, and that actions to do so would come with benefits such as cleaner air and better housing. She said, "How can we facilitate that people know they have the power to do something?" The European Commission said it would present a communication on managing climate risk recently. The European Environment Agency report says several climate risks have already reached critical levels. It says if decisive action is not taken now, most climate risks could reach critical or catastrophic levels by the end of this century. Lena Ilamanonen said, "This should be the final wake-up call." The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The European Union Environment Agency said on Monday, 11th of March, countries across Europe should prepare for catastrophic risks, ranging from floods to deadly heat waves, as worsening climate change hits every part of their economies and societies. The Copenhagen-based body said in its first Europe-wide analysis of climate-related risks policymakers need to draw up new plans to address the challenges ahead. The European Environment Agency said Europe is the world's fastest warming continent, heating up at twice the global average. Even if countries manage to slow global warming, global temperatures are already more than 1 degree Celsius higher than pre-industrial times. The European Environment Agency said the damage will depend in part on whether policymakers act now to prepare societies, for example, by improving insurance coverage, redesigning infrastructure, and introducing laws to protect outdoor workers from deadly heat. Without more urgent action, the European Environment Agency said most of the 36 climate risks facing Europe could hit critical or catastrophic levels this century. They include risks to health, crop production, and infrastructure. In a pessimistic scenario, by the end of the century, the European Environment Agency said hundreds of thousands of people would die from heat waves, and economic losses from coastal floods alone could exceed 1 trillion euros per year. That would far exceed the 650 billion euros lost to weather and climate-related extremes across the European bloc from 1980 to 2022. Kate Levick, Associate Director of climate think tank E3G, urged governments to respond to the European Environment Agency's findings. Kate Levick said, "There's a particular role for finance ministers to essentially look at what happens to balance sheets in terms of assets and liabilities at national level as a result of climate risk." The European Commission will publish its response to the report in the coming days. According to a draft European Commission communication seen by Bloomberg News Agency, Europe stands to suffer significant economic effects amounting to some 7% of its output by the end of the century, even if the world manages to contain the increase of global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The European Environment Agency's report argues that climate change will be even more acute in southern Europe, including Greece, with the average temperature in the continent rising by a considerable 3 degrees Celsius in the scenario of a global rise by 1.5 degrees Celsius. The blueprint further warns that in case global warming exceeds 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the impact will be even more dramatic, with the European Union economy standing to lose some 2.4 trillion euros from its gross domestic product between 2031 and 2050.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Thousands of Austrians marched under the slogan "Stop the genocide, stop the occupation" in the capital Vienna. The Palestine Committee and Palestine Solidarity Austria organized the demonstration. The march was held on Saturday, a week after house raids of Palestinian activists in the city of Linz. Police recently also interrogated protesters in other cities. International Quds Day was an aspiration for the organizers of Saturday's protest.
And all these commemoration days is to really say, wake up, we are really in the situation where people are getting killed every day and we have to stop it as soon as possible.
Organizers also criticized a four-day visit of the President of the Austrian Parliament, Wolfgang Sobotka, to Israel this week.
Well, obviously, when looking at the last 6 months, there's been some unconditional support for Israel, obviously, and their action in the Gaza Strip, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Several speakers stressed Austrian solidarity with Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the US-Israeli genocidal war continues unabated. They said the Austrian government does not speak for them.
It's the most obvious wrongdoing that I've ever seen in my life.
The protesters called for support for Lebanon and Yemen against US imperialist aggression. People from around the world joined the Vienna March.
I was born in Chile under a dictatorship and I have a lot of Palestinian friends. I am even wearing a t-shirt from a team called Palestina, who was founded by Palestinian migrants several years ago. I couldn't be in peace with myself if I wasn't here demonstrating and saying and raising my voice at least.